Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahavriyam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishamahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 28. My dear Lord, I am very impudent for not accepting your instructions. But this is not my fault. It is due to my having been born in a Kshatriya family. My stepmother, Suruchi, has pierced my heart with her harsh words. Therefore, your valuable instruction does not stand in my heart. O learned Brahmana, I want to occupy a position more exalted than any yet achieved within the three worlds by anyone, even by my fathers and grandfathers. If you will oblige, kindly advise me of an honest path to follow by which I can achieve the goal of my life. Right, so an honest path means it's the proper path that's authorized, and it will also give the proper appropriate result. Because dishonest may seemingly give the result, but then the result will be temporary. Right. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Dhruva Maharaj says, though you have given this nectar of peacefulness out of mercy to an unqualified person like me, since I have the nature of a Kshatriya, my heart has been pierced and is like a broken pot. Therefore, your instructions do not stay there. With irony, Dhruva says, let the weak, cowardly Brahmins drink the nectar of your instructions on peacefulness. Since I am a Kshatriya prince with fierce behavior, I cannot even glance on this instruction. Then, what do you want? Tell me the correct method for attaining a position unattained by my father, Bhutanapada, who insulted me, by his father, Manu, and by his father, Brahma, and by Brahma's other sons and grandsons. Teaching me that path alone, you will see my courage in attaining that in no time. So, here this is, he's pointing out is that this is for the Brahmins who, you know, you can say they're cowardly, but they're cowardly, they're not interested in fighting because they don't have that need and that spirit. So if someone doesn't have the need, you can't call them cowardly. Cowardly is they should be doing something and they're not due to weakness. Yeah. But that's what the problem is pointing out about the Kshatriya. If it's just everything's proper and pure and all the samskars are done, then you get this very clear nature. So then even at 5 years old, it's like this. Bharat Maharaj at 3, you know, when he'd go out into the jungle and play, he'd catch tigers and tie them up to trees, you know, for fun. You know, like little kids will go and catch the cat or something and tie it up and stuff. So he would catch tigers and lions and tie them up to trees. And so I guess they wouldn't bother them, you know, so you don't hear of losing any fingers, so it must have worked out. So it was, Srila Prabhupada elaborates, but because he wants something, it means his father, his grandfather, his great-grandfather, or any of the other sons. In other words, no one in this world has ever attained, because these are the biggest people there are. Right, you have Brahma and the Prajapatis and their descendants. So if you get something bigger than any of them, there isn't anything greater. Right? Srila Prabhupada elaborates. It is said that the heart or mind is just like an earthen pot. Once broken, it cannot be repaired by any means. Dhruva Maharaj gave this example to Narad Muni. He said that his heart, having been pierced by the arrows of his stepmother's harsh words, felt so broken that nothing seemed valuable but his desire to counter her insult. Right? So you want to counter her insult. I mean, the basic thing is she's talking about the kingdom. So if he counters the insult by gaining his father's kingdom, in one sense it would counter.
But it was still my maintain that envy and all those things like that. But why even bother with your father's kingdom? You get your own kingdom that's greater than anybody's. Then she can't have any envy because you're just in a more powerful position. Right? So it's just the natural. You know, you're going to show them. You're going to show them very nicely. You know, so that they're very clear about what's happening. His stepmother had said that because he was born from the womb of Suniti, a neglected queen of Maharaj Uttanapada. And why is she neglected? Because of Suruchi. Like that. Because the thing is, if Suniti has, Suruchi. Yeah. Because she is more favored. Therefore, she'll make sure that the other wife is even less favored. Not that she's favored and the other one is dealt with nicely. She'll make sure that the other one is not dealt with nicely. Right? Because it's not actually a position. If it was her position, she was the first wife, she wouldn't need to do that. It's natural. If there's a big yajna, there's this and that, then you sit with your wife and do the yajna. That will be the first wife. Does that make sense? Like that. So anything official is always done with the first wife. So she's overstepping this because she's not. So therefore, just to make it obvious. So then that position that's why she's a neglected queen. Because she's pointing that out. She says, you're a son of a neglected queen. Why would she say that? Because she's the one that's making her neglected. Dhruva Maharaj was not fit to sit either on the throne or on his father's lap. In other words, according to his stepmother, he could not be declared king. Dhruva Maharaj's determination, therefore, was to become king of a planet exalted even beyond that possessed by Lord Brahma, the greatest of all the demigods. Oh, I understand. Okay. They're playing a Western game. They're not playing Indian games. I don't know, but it's Western games means basically if you have an IQ of 0.003, you qualify. Huh? If it's Bull Rush, you don't even meet that much. Right? Like that. If you had a lobotomy and you were declared brain dead, you're qualified to play Bull Rush. Like that. Because the Indian games, then they have, you have to use intelligence, and it's clever, and there's technique, and all those kinds of things. But these Western games, you need zero ability to do anything except yell and scream. So that's why, that just struck me, why there's more yelling and screaming. Because they're playing a Western game. No, unless they're playing. No, but this is too big to be playing that other one. I don't know. I always generally recommend the Indian games because you have to use your brain. But
it's too hot to use the brain.
It's too hot to use the brain. Okay, yeah, maybe that's it. Yeah, because in the winter they play the Sadguti and all those things. And now, okay, yeah. Maybe that's it, yeah. When it gets hotter, then the brain goes down, so they play these games. Yeah, so if it hits 120, then they'll be playing Bull Rush, right? Okay, yeah, okay. I get it. Dhruva Maharaj's determination, therefore, was to become king of a planet exalted even beyond that possessed by Lord Brahma, the greatest of all the demigods. Dhruva Maharaj indirectly informed the great sage Narada that there are four kinds of human spirit, the Brahminical, the Kshatriya, the Vaishya, and the Shudra spirit. The spirit of one caste is not applicable to the members of the other. Okay, they have the nature of one, the spirit of the other. Okay, so here's where Prabhupada's clearly using the word, because he says that the son takes on the nature of the mother, the spirit of the father. So there's an attitude of a Kshatriya, but there's the nature of a Kshatriya. Does that make sense? So because both his parents are Kshatriyas, therefore he'll have both. It'll match. You have the nature and the spirit. But if it's a mixed, like if it's a Brahmin and a Kshatriya, then you would have the nature of a Kshatriya with the spirit of a Brahmin. So that's why it's never recommended.
Anuloma?
That's Anuloma. But if you reverse it, then if he has the nature of a Brahmana but the spirit of a Kshatriya, then that's even more of a problem. Right? So that's why if it's Anuloma, you'll call him a Kshatriya. But if it's Pratiloma, he'll be a Sutta. Because that really doesn't match. Does that make sense? So 1 degree in Anuloma, you're still considered one of the four Varnas. But 1 degree in Pratiloma, you're automatically a different species. Does that make sense?
Nature is of the mother and spirit of the father? Just
for the boy. And for the girl, it would be the opposite. That's why the dealing is different. Does that make sense? Just like I was reading one thing, is where it's a new debate. Did we discuss this? Cat, tiger mom, cat father, cat dad. Oh, it's something that came up over a movie they made in China. They won. Okay.
The game is over?
No, it just means that particular part is that well. Oh well. They're happy, right?
The game is over.
Huh? The game is over, you sure?
Not always.
Oh, well, they have something else to do. Oh, he left. Okay, now they'll have to play Boulevard. Okay, so it's some Chinese movie that was made, you know, a popular movie, called Tiger Mother, Tiger Mom, Cat Dad, and there's a daughter. And so Tiger Mom is defined as a mother, the mother who, you know, pushes and drives and, you know, try to get excellence out of the child, while the Cat Dad means that he's accommodating and, you know, what's their mood, what do they want to do, and like that. And so that sparked this whole, and it's become a very popular movie, and it sparked this whole debate. I mean, it's not only in China, but around the world, about which is the proper way to raise the kid. You know, because in the West, it can only be one or the other, right? You're either for us or against us, right? There's no such thing. If you can accommodate both, you're a fence seater and nobody likes you, right? So then someone sent me that article and I was looking at it, and then, but in the Vedic tradition, then if it's a daughter, it would be tiger mom, cat dad. But if it was a son, it would be tiger dad, cat mom. Because you have to have both. So in other words, whatever they are, for the boy, the father is the disciplinarian, the mom is the kind one. For the daughter, the mom's the disciplinarian, the father's the kind one. That's how you have to do it. So it's different. You know, so in the same way as then the nature of the daughter also will be reversed from that of the son. Right? Does that make sense? So the nature of the girl will be like that of her father, but the spirit will be like the mother. Does that make sense? So if they're both Kshatriyas, like we say, it works out. So for the boy, it works out. For the girl, it works out. Right? It's only when it's different, then it starts having some.
What if they're both tigers?
Well, then you have a tiger cub. Well, you either have something that does really, really well, or something that's very, very confused. But, I mean, it works out for tigers, right? Tigers grow up really well in that environment and all that. You know, it's not that you know, if you have tiger mom, tiger dad, then you end up with an aardvark or something, or go like that. No, you end up with a tiger. So.
I'm stealing those tigers. And there was more tiger, less a tiger. You know.
Sorry?
In those tigers, mother is less a tiger for a boy. And
yeah, that allows you to be there. But that just means is that that's equal nature. But then it means that all the meaning of it is one is kind while the other is strict. right? And then it reverses for whether it's a boy or a girl. But it doesn't mean that there's not equal nature. Well, they all have a drive, so there's a good drive. You know, it's just like you have those where both parents are professionals. Generally, they both are pushing that the child becomes a professional. But still in that, the mother will be the strict one for the daughter, the father will be the strict one for the son, and the mother will be the accommodating. But it doesn't mean that they're both not telling you, you know, the one is saying, come on, you got to get out there, you got to do it. And the other one's saying, no, you know, it's like this. And, you know, it's like, you know, it's just think about it. You know, you have this and you'll be able to do this and that, oh, and be situated nicely. Like, so they're saying the same thing, but just more pleasantly. So that's the thing, is the masculine and feminine principle is there, so you get both, so then it becomes that nice balance. Yes? No? Very good. So, does that make sense? So, she's saying that within the tiger mom, tiger dad, that one is being the more gentle of the two, depending upon which it is.
But it's also sometimes interchangeable, it depends on the situation.
That's there, but the principle is generally it'll be strong, because how it's dealt, it may be the father with the son is, you know, very sober and speaking very nicely and that while the mother's freaking out, but he's still the one that's the disciplinarian and he's just saying this is the way it is. You know? Like that. But the general flavor is there. So that's what's interesting is that the modern has to be this or that when actually, no, you have to have both. But you have to know which do you apply where. Because in there, they don't know why it works out so nicely people can relate. It's because it was a daughter. But if it had been a son, then you say he's a weak father. But if it's a daughter, you say he's a kind father. Right? And if it was the other way around, and it was you say he's a harsh father and a weak mother. Like that. So the whole point is it has to be in that particular that particular formula. Then it works. Dhruva Maharaj indirectly informed. Okay. So the spirit of one's caste is not applicable to the members of another. Right? The philosophical spirit enunciated by Narad Muni might have been suitable for a Brahmana spirit, but is not suitable for a Kshatriya. Dhruva frankly admitted that he was lacking in Brahminical humility, and was therefore unable to accept the philosophy of Narad Muni. But we know he's testing to see, because the point is. If by saying this, and he'll go, okay, yeah, right, then that's one thing. But if he says, no, you know, we're Kshatriyas, but then it's okay. You know, that's his nature. The statements of Dhruva Maharaj indicate that unless a child is trained according to his tendency, there's no possibility of his developing his particular spirit. Right? So that's why one has to be able to identify what it is and then train them accordingly. So then you have to see. Just like, let's say, if you have a sutta. Like if you have a Kshatriya man who's married a Brahmin woman, now their child being a Sutta, he could take on three different natures. Either Brahminical, Kshatriya, or that of a Shudra. Yes?
Will he be born like that, or can he develop?
No, he'll have the nature, then you have to see which it is. And then you train accordingly. Because if he has that Brahminical nature, you train him as a Brahmin. You wouldn't say, we're a Kshatriya family, you have to be, no. But if you took the Kshatriya, you'd take that. But in any case, that's generally what you do in anything, because you can't always guarantee what it is you're getting. Because there's something in common between the parents and the child, but it's not 100%. It's basically like Prabhupada's saying, if you have these families where for generations they're following all these things very nicely, then generally you'll have someone who has that nature is born in that family. But you see with time, sometimes it's not. But you see, even though it is proper like that, you get different. Like but generally you would get going up, not down, right? Because of the piety of the line, therefore they might get someone more pious. Generally, not less pious. So you see, it is. I think it was Rishabhdev. His 100 sons. He had 100 sons, right? So Rishabhdev had 100 sons. So out of that, 80 were Brahmins. So they would be trained as Brahmins. He wouldn't say, hey, we're Kshatriyas here. You know, they're trained as Brahmins. 9 were Kshatriyas. So they were trained as Kshatriyas. And 11 of them were Paramahamsas. So then they wouldn't even take up the Brahminical, like, occupation. They would just be transcendental. So they would be trained accordingly. So that means the parent would see the nature of the child and then see that they're trained in that. So it's not that they're lax. It's a matter of whatever it is, then that's where the training is, where the association, where the direction is given. Otherwise, if it's not, the spirit won't develop. Does that make sense? You know, the guy, let's say, he's a businessman, but he wanted to be a actor or a musician. Right? So he does the other thing because it has the thing of the nature. But his spirit is the other. Right? So then eventually at some point in the story, then it comes out, and then he ends up doing that, and then he becomes really big at it and good, and then finally his father accepts so that, okay, you know, this is the... Right? And then everything works out, and like that, the credits come on. Right? Right? So you have to get the two, the nature and the spirit. It was the duty of the spiritual master or teacher to observe the psychological movement of a particular boy and thus train him in a particular occupational duty. Dhruva Maharaj, having already been trained in the Kshatriya spirit, would not accept the Brahminical philosophy. In America, we have practical experience of this incompatibility of the Brahminical and Kshatriya temperaments. The American boys, who have simply been trained as Shudras, are not at all fit to fight in battle. Right? Otherwise, you know, that, why was it? When this is going on, that's when the whole Vietnam War and everything is going on. Right? Sorry. But they were really didn't want to fight. They were pretty much useless, you know. So that because you're just taking across the board. Then they figured out is that, okay, rather than have the draft and get unlimited amounts of useless guys, let's have it, less people, pay them something, you know, good, and then you have those who want to be there. So at least what few do have more of a Kshatriya spirit, they'll come forward, and then at least you have a smaller army, but it's actually Kshatriyas rather than this monster big thing of, you know, of Shudras. You know?
In one sense, but then they also have a whole crowd of people who just do it because it's the only kind of job they can get.
Yeah, but then they have to comply and learn and stuff like that. So then they'll be placed them accordingly. Because then, you know, a foot soldier technically is a Shudra, but whether he's a Shudra for Kshatriyas or whether he's a Shudra for, you know, how you say, who knows what. Therefore, when they are called to... Oops. Therefore, when they're called to join the military, they refuse because they do not have Kshatriya spirit. This is the cause of this great dissatisfaction in society. I'm only smiling because I applied as a CEO. That makes sense? Conscientious objector? Like that. And they gave me the listing. Don't call us, we'll call you. In other words, they weren't interested at all. Right? Like that, so. Yeah. And the fun part is my grandfather was a captain in a biplane at squadron. Yeah, so that's the problem when you call these things. Okay. This is the cause of great dissatisfaction in society because there's no people aren't being trained according to their nature. Right? That the boys do not have the Kshatriya spirit does not mean that they are trained in Brahminical qualities. They are trained as Shudras. And thus, in frustration, they are becoming hippies. However, as soon as they enter the Krishna consciousness movement, being started in America, they are trained to meet the Brahminical qualifications, even though they have fallen to the lowest conditions as Shudras. Right? So in other words, hippie and Shudra, you can kind of take as synonymous here. In other words, since the Krishna consciousness movement is open for everyone, people in general can attain the Brahminical qualifications. This is the greatest need at the present moment. For now, there are actually no Brahmins, no Kshatriyas, but only some Vaishyas, and for the most part, Shudras.
Somehow, I always don't understand the point that qualifications, kind of what you're born with, an attained qualification means the ashram side.
Yes, in other words, those who have no qualification become qualified through the ashram side. Then accordingly, that's applied into the varna side, and then it can be, it can get somewhere.
But not to the, like, if they are on the varna side, they should be. Doesn't matter how much you train them, they won't become Vaishnava.
No, but they could be an assistant to Vaishnava. What is an MBA?
Yeah.
An MBA is a fancy name for a Shudra for a Vaishya.
Yeah.
You know? That's what it is. Vaishyas hire MBAs, right? And then they tell them stupid stuff like, how you say there's no I in teamwork. Right? And that's what you tell Shudras. Because, one, they can't think business, so they shouldn't even try. Right? But people who can think, that's a whole different category, right? You know, so that's the aspect is that they'll do that, or they get a job with the government, or they get a job, you know, assisting in something here and there. But you know, they teach PE or something, you know. You know. So the whole idea is that they're able to work within those capacities. But so that's an occupation. But because of their brahminical qualification from the ashram side, then you can see as they qualify doing deity worship and practicing the brahminical lifestyle, preaching, you know, all these different aspects they can do. Because means it's just like this. Let us say you have someone who, okay, let's take four book distributors, okay? Okay, one is because of the accident, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, the conscious going out, and everything like that. That's why they're distributing the books, right? So they're not worried about how many they do. The more they do, then the more means people come in contact with Krishna consciousness, right? So that's their inspiration. It's not about how much money, how many books, and this and that. So when they say, "Wow, you did great," well, you know, they're not so inspired by it. Then you have those Kshatriya. He's doing it because this establishes Dharma, because Krishna consciousness is the right thing. It's the only thing that's going to make culture work properly. So people should take this book because they should behave properly in society. All right? So therefore, it's what is supposed to be done. This is, has to be done. It's important work. It must be done because of the structure. Right? They'll be very structured and organized. The other ones will be very dedicated and not, you know what I'm saying? Then the next one is there because you're dealing in money. I use technique, they buy the book. Right? I get money for that. And then people recognize, okay, you know, you did so many books, so much money. Otherwise, why mention Lakshmi points? Right? You understand? Because that makes them happy. Right? Shudra just means he has the art, knows the art of selling. And so he can sell. He sell books. He can be selling used cars. But he's selling books. So in all these cases, you have all four varnas doing the same activity, which is technically brahminical because it's preaching. Right? At the same time is that brahminical element is the prominent, because why are they distributing books? They could be making more money doing something else. They could be a teacher down at a school. They could be doing administration. They could be doing their own business. Or they could be out there having a job with the same technique. They could be selling real estate, right? Be on the phone all day and stuff. Right? But they're not. They're doing this. Why? Because of the brahminical. So that's the thing, is you have to be able to see both at once. And you have to know that you're dealing with the soul. So that's why you mix all this, then you can start to see who should be engaged where. That's why it's seemingly difficult, because we want to just assume, we have this symptom, okay. He likes singing. He's a Shudra. Okay, so then he does this rather than it's a hobby or... You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah, so that doesn't make sense to me. Like for many, many, many of the sweetest kirtaniers are actually Vaishyas. Because to do good as a Vaishya, you have to have a strong Venus. Venus also makes the voice of it. Right? So they get into it. So either they're great singers or they can't carry a tune in a bucket. You just, you know, one or the other. Like that. Does that make sense? So you have like that. So it's that, you know, Vasu Ghosh Adi Gaya.
So Vasu Ghosh is heading the those who are doing the kirtan. He's Ghosh, he's Vaishnav. Like that. So so the different, you have to know what it is, where it's prominent, what's the. So in here is that from ashram's side, those who are not fit for varnashram become qualified, because of the whole purpose of varnashram is to raise you to the brahminical standard. But we can't do it through piety, we do it through devotion. So that means our only qualification to be functioning within varnashram is because we're doing devotional service. If it was up to mundane, there's a good chance hardly anybody would be doing brahminical activity. Does that make sense?
Studying
would always be brahminical? Studying, no, not necessarily. Studying is a hobby. People read like that. Like I was saying before, is that what now is like people consider like over the top, the classics and stuff like that. Before was the standard. If you go back 150 years, that was the standard things that the average person would read. They would know these things. Now the scholars would be able to go deeply into it and quote things and all that. But the others, they would read, and you know, people would sit and read the Bible just to read. It wasn't that, you know, they were like doing a divinity course or something, you know. So it's just the common man, it was just education was valued. He's dressed as a gentleman and he's sitting in his chair reading these books and he's a Shudra. You know, so it's just a different standard before. That makes sense. Now they're a Shudra, they're pretty much a Shudra. But now Shudras are rising up, right? You know. So the upcoming nerdy class, right? So it's just, does that make sense? Yeah, because basically the middle class has to be made out of either Shudras who are doing well or others who are not doing so well. Right? Because if there's not peace, there's no middle class. Does that make sense? If there's peace, middle class comes. Because everybody talks about the emerging middle class. We've discussed this before. Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about it and showing the danger of it. Because they're having this prosperity, they don't connect it to religion. And therefore, then they try to become independent. They become atheistic. They think, I am knowledgeable, I have money, and that. And so what do we need with all this religion? And he's talking about it in the 1860s. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is talking about, you know, these early 1900s, 1920s, that he's talking about the emerging middle class. Right? Because you have these wars, then the middle class, then it goes down, then there's prosperity, the middle class comes out. Then the next war, it goes down, and then it comes out again. Does that make sense? So after World War I, then the emerging middle class is coming out. You know, so after every time, whenever there's peace, there's an emerging middle class. When there's war, it disappears again. Does that make sense? So it's... Okay. This means you think. Is that right? It's my watch. Battery died again. It's right. Okay. Okay. So why don't we stop and then, because otherwise we get into. No. We were already doing this. Okay. In other words, since Krishna consciousness movement is open to everyone, people in general can attain the brahminical qualifications. This is the greatest need at the present moment. For now, there are actually no Brahmins or Kshatriyas, but only some Vaishyas and, for the most part, Shudras. The classification of society into Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras is very scientific. That's the thing, but people who think they're scientific try to get rid of it. Right? So, but it's actually... Yeah. In the human social body, the Brahmins are considered the head. The Kshatriyas are the arms. The Vaishyas are the belly, and the Shudras are the legs. At the present moment, the body has legs and a belly. But there are no arms or head. Right? So this is not even... a chicken with his head cut off. This is a chicken with his head and wings cut off, right? And therefore society is topsy-turvy. It is necessary to reestablish the Brahminical qualifications in order to raise the fallen human society to the highest standard of spiritual consciousness. Because if you create Brahmins, then you'll get Kshatriyas. Right? You can't get Kshatriyas without Brahmins, but you can get Brahmins without Kshatriyas. And as is mentioned, Vaishyas and Shudras will just happen. In other words, everybody's Shudra, and those who can figure out how to make money off of them, they're the Vaishyas. Right? So that will happen automatically. Does that make sense? Right. So that's because Brahmana Kshatriya means you have to have character. Vaishya and Shudra, you simply have to have skill. So now if you combine skill and character, then you get a higher class, then you get a human being. Does that make sense? So when they're saying here, Prabhupada's saying, he's talking about Vaishya not in the natural sense in the Varnashram, because we're talking about they don't have to have any character, because in the Vedic system, Vaishyas have good character. Does that make sense? Okay, continuing 29. When Dhruva Maharaj refused to accept the Brahminical instruction of Narad Muni, naturally the next question would be what sort of instruction he wanted. So even before Narad Muni asked, Dhruva Maharaj expressed his heartfelt desire. His father, of course, was the emperor of the entire world, and his grandfather, Lord Brahma, was the creator of the universe. Dhruva Maharaj expressed his desire to possess a kingdom better than those of his father and grandfather. He frankly stated that he wanted a kingdom which had no competitor within the three worlds, namely the higher, middle, and lower planetary systems. Right, so to have this kind of focus and determination, right, means it's good training, good parentage, and everything like that. Otherwise, how will they have such focus at five, right? The greatest personality within this universe is Lord Brahma, and Dhruva Maharaj wanted a position even greater than his. Right? You know, of course. Huh? Yeah, yeah.
But he's childish, in a way.
Childish, but the point is he had the determination. See, something's childish because it's something you want but you can't get. This is something he wants but he has the determination to get, so it'd be hard to call it childish. Huh? And he got it, yeah. You know. So, like that. He wanted to take advantage of Narad Muni's presence because he knew very well that if Narad Muni, the greatest devotee of Lord Krishna, could bless him or show him the path, then certainly he would be able to occupy a more exalted position than any person within the three worlds. Thus he wanted help from Naradaji to achieve that position. Dhruva Maharaj wanted a position greater than that of Brahma. This was practically an impossible proposition. But by pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a devotee can achieve even the impossible.
Who was he in his previous life?
Who was he? I don't know. I've never heard.
I also
No, I haven't heard. Yes.
Dhruva Maharaj, is this determination also can be told as a quality for getting a spiritually successful?
You have to be determined. See, in other words, all the good qualities, the superior qualities, they're valuable when they're connected to the Lord. If they're not connected to the Lord, they're impersonal. Right? On its best. You know what I'm saying? Because if you apply it just into mundane, you don't really get much. But you still have to have them. That means superior qualities have to be used with proper technique to accomplish anything. That's just the way it works, right? So the point is that since I have to use superior qualities and excellent technique, why wouldn't I apply that into devotional service and get the best result? Because even material, you still have to use those qualities, even though you may use them temporarily. So I only accept the quality because I need that. Let's say I'm tolerant because I have to be to get the particular result, but once I get the result, I don't need to be tolerant anymore. So I only accepted it temporarily just to get what I wanted. Right? But the Brahminical standard is that's what the platform you function from. That's your character. Does that make sense? So people in ashram are not qualified, but in varna they'll use the superior qualities. But the Vedic systems, you qualify in ashram, then you apply those same good qualities in the varna. right? You get a better result. Therefore, you see in the Vedic system that whoever was doing what, they were way better than anything nowadays. Does that make sense?
So when we give some advice to people, so we also look for this, and accordingly we give, like somebody is just casual, we know that he's not so much determined, then we don't give superior advice which he cannot function.
No, it means you giving advice to what he can relate to. Because he's casual, but the point is why is he casual? What's the reason for being casual?
Because you don't know him.
No, but at the same time, it may be because he looks around and doesn't see anything of value, so he's casual. Or it could be he's just lazy, so he's casual. So the point is does he want more or he doesn't want more? You know? Does he want more but he's too lazy for it, or he would want more but there's no ideal? So is it a matter, does he want second, you know, that he's looking for ideals or he's just looking for facility? So you have to just see, because the point is in any case, unless you act, you don't get anything. So even materially, you won't get anything. So why would you get anything spiritually? So therefore, you have to be endeavoring in Krishna consciousness. Then you get something. But at least you get something of value, eternal. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Well? And at the same time, because Guru Maharaj, because it's told in Bhagavad Gita, Artha Jigyasu, Artha Jigyan. So one of these qualities, one of these reasons people choose to serve the Lord at the same time. And then the secondary principles apply, how they...
No, these are secondary. These are the masculine aspect of the secondary. You understand primary and secondary, each has masculine and feminine. Right, because each one will have within it the primary and secondary. So, of the secondary, it means the external form, where we're working within the abilities in that. You have to have the qualities that make the form and the action function. Does that make sense? So, all it is whether it's more refined or not. Just like within the spiritual, then the primary is that love for Krishna. And the secondary is going to be the forms and activities that express that. You know, parental rasa, conjugal rasa, friendship rasa, like this. So that's the primary and secondary on that level. But if you only look at the parental and all that kind of thing, then that, and you don't look at the primary serving Krishna, it automatically drops it down into the mundane. So now within that, the primary would be the impersonal qualities rather than the personal, right? Because in the spiritual, you're looking at that Bhagavan. But when you don't look at Bhagavan, that leaves you with Brahman and Paramatma, so that drops you down into the material world. Right? And being in the material world, then you're going to look at what are the qualities necessary to perform the parental activities or this or that. Then you're going to have the actions themselves. Right? Because the other one is spontaneous. Because of the love, then you do those things. Here there has to be some, you have to think about it. Does that make sense? Yeah. The sage Maitreya continued, "The great personality Narad Muni, upon hearing the words of Dhruva Maharaj, became very compassionate toward him. And in order to show him his causeless mercy, he gave him the following expert advice." The great sage Narad Muni told Dhruva Maharaj, "The instruction given by your mother, Suniti, to follow the path of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is just suitable for you. You should therefore completely absorb yourself in the devotional service of the Lord." Right? So he's not going to do it through the secondary means within the secondary. Right? In other words, the primary is devotional service. But he's recommended devotional service performed with the secondary attributes of that would be labeled as brahminical. Right? Does that make sense? So with the brahminical, they would have used those particular qualities, forgiveness and tolerance and all those, and then perform the activities that Brahmins do to express their devotion. Right? But the Kshatriya won't use those qualities. They'll use different qualities, chivalry, and this. They're also superior qualities. They just use a different set of superior qualities. Right? Just like Vaishya uses a different set, Shudra uses a different set. You know what I'm saying? So, within the secondary aspect, then they're not. But see, Narad Muni has, in all cases, described devotional service. But he was just doing it that, you know, you're a child and this and that, you just take that, it's the natural thing, you just function within ashram. Children, you don't, they function within ashram, they just play. Right? They're coming up to the standard of functioning properly as brahmacharis, so then they can take on the qualities of varna. But he's already able to function within that nature of varna. So he's not going to accept the brahminical aspect as occupation. You know, as an individual, yes, but he wants to get something. So you get something through occupation. That's what occupation does. Right? You want facility, it's your occupation that gets it. You want to advance personally, your ashram does that. So the Brahmins, what they advance personally, that's what they have as an occupation. So he's saying he can't use that occupation, he has to use the kshatriya. Does this make some sense? Right here? Right? So it's not that, oh, how is this? He's a devotee and this, how can he? But no, the point is, it's what tools you use to express devotion. So Narad Muni, all he did was shift that, yes, so now let's go back to the point. Your mother gave this instruction. He accepted that. That's why he's out in the forest. That he has to go seek out the Supreme Lord and get benediction from him, worship him. So he's accepted that now, but he's, so we're going to go back to taking that, apply it as a Brahmin. No. Okay, taking that now applies to kshatriya. It's not that he changed what his presentation was. The primary stayed exactly the same with Narad Muni. All it is now the medium through which it will be expressed has changed. So now he's showing him how, as a kshatriya, he's going to do this. Does that make sense?
I just don't see the change. Because there's
it's just like, let's say, okay, you want to get over your hunger, then you have to cook. Okay? You don't know what cooking is. You go out in search of cooking. Okay? Then the personality comes along, the guru comes along, and tells you, yes, you just, you know, take some stuff there, you just steam this, boil that, then you eat. You know, and then he points out as, I can't eat steamed or boiled. I can only eat things that are, you know, fried and all this. And that. Okay, so then we're going to do cooking, but we're going to do it now in this way. You understand? So the devotional service doesn't change, but now he's going to change the direction on how he instructs them. Because he's seeing it as a kshatriya that he's got to get that. So he's just saying, why bother for the material? You want the Supreme Lord, don't bother for anything. Right? But he's saying, no, I want the material. And so he says, okay, then you do devotional service in connection with the material.
And the process is the same?
Process is the same, it's just your perspective changes. So nothing changes. So that's the whole point, is that we think it's a totally different thing, but Prabhupada's mentioned it's the spirit. Same situation, same paraphernalia, but the spirit's different how you deal with it. Like I was telling you, once we were sitting on the train. Train got stuck for 72 hours or something. You know? And so you're sitting there in the, I think it was two-tier AC or something. And so then, who's in two-tier AC, right? It's not your common person. So there's all these business guys sitting there. Right? And they are bored stiff. I mean, really bored. So then at one point, a guy walks in selling, you know, where you take the gur and you heat it and with the peanuts and you make that kind of like peanut brittle kind of thing. You know? And the guy's coming in and selling them for, I think 4 rupees each or something. And the guy comes in and says, 4 rupees. And this bored Vaishya that's sitting there, he just, without even blinking, he just goes, okay, because that means 4, that's 8, I'll take... what is it? I'll take 2 for 6 or 4 for 10. Just like that.
It wasn't a sad, calculated net. Just as soon as the guy said 4 rupees each, he said, "I'll take 2 for 6 or 4 for 10." Not that he needed 4, but it's just, it's a deal. It's a deal. It's something to do. And the guy was so shocked because no one, you know, that quickly just, you know, and he handed him 4. And the guy just pulled out 10 rupees. Everything happened within, I don't know, 5 seconds, 10 seconds. And then everybody else sitting around, all the other Vaishya guys, they're handed, you know, "Hey, you want to sell this?" You know, it's just something to do. So he saw an opportunity to deal with profit. Right? So actually there, the Vaishya made the profit because he got to engage his nature. The other guy was just selling things. He, you know, he may have been a business person and very small, or he could have been a shudra, and all he knows how to do is sell peanut brittle. Because otherwise, if it was a Vaishya selling peanut brittle, the first, you know, day or a couple of days, he'd be selling himself. The next couple of days, he'd be hired a higher guy. And by, you know, after 6 months, you'd have this whole network of, you know, 50 guys selling peanut brittle on all the trains. You know, and he'd be taking all the, you know, like that. You know, working at a factory to make it cheaper, going to the shores, getting the peanuts, you know, at the cheaper price, and getting the gore, and then, you know. So the thing is, a good chance he's just trying to get by, and it just happened. But the other guy, he got to engage his nature, you know. But just textbook. It just stuck in my mind that it was just so far out how the guy just. It wasn't a thought, because generally you think, well, say, I'll give you this, and then they bargain and do a whole thing. No, he just said what the options were like that, and the guy was just so shocked he just took it. You know, so that's a Vaishya, right? You know, so that's, you know, so that was very far out.
Have you made the option so that it's a win-win?
Yeah.
So either way, whether the guy sells it for 2 for 6 or 4 for 10, he would have won it.
Yes, well, if he just said one of them, then it's bargain, but he already provided 2. So do you want to sell 4 for even less, or 2 for, so like that. So then the guy got, you know. So that's even the technique. It wasn't even just he said that, but he gave him options. And then immediately people like options. Yeah. You know, it's like Ayurveda mentions about options. He says it's about the mind. If you tell them you have to do this, then people know, why do I have to do that? But if you give options, they'll pick. You know? So then and the example is given of the young girl and piercing your ears for earrings. Now she wants to pierce her ears for earrings, but she doesn't want the pain. So then it's about pierce your ears, all this, that, it's a whole scene. But if you say, okay, we're going to pierce your ears, do you want to use the solid gold needle or you want to use the solid silver needle? And so she'll say the gold needle, you know, and so then it's done. She's not going to complain about her ears being pierced because she had options. So you take that and now apply that into economics, then you get that, you apply it into administration, you apply it into education, you know, that's why the Shastra gives options, right? You can do this, go back to Godhead, or you can not do this and you can go to hell. You know, you have your options. You know, so that's it. You know, or you can do pious activities and you can either go to the heavenly planets, you know, and then fall down from there. You go to Brahman, fall down from there. You go back to Godhead and stay there eternally. Or you can be pious and get some benefit, or you can be impious and suffer. So it's always options. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes? So the button, yeah. That was in yesterday, that question in the class. That would have further explained, you know, why there's options. Okay. The great sage Nara told Dhruva, "The instruction given by your mother, Suniti, to follow the path of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is just suitable for you. You should therefore completely absorb yourself in the devotional service of the Lord." 39-40, Srila Prabhupada writes, Narad Muni is referred to here as Bhagavan because he can bless any person just as the Supreme Personality of Godhead can. right? Because he's the devotee of the Lord. So because he's the pure devotee, then whatever he wants to do is always connected with the Lord. Therefore, the Lord is happy and sanctions. He was very pleased with Dhruva Maharaj, and he could have at once personally given whatever he wanted. But that is not the duty of the spiritual master. His duty is to engage the disciple in proper devotional service as prescribed in the Shastras. Krishna was similarly present before Arjuna, and even though he could have given him all facilities for victory over the opposing party without a fight, he did not do so. Instead, he asked Arjuna to fight. Because it's about the relationships. Otherwise, it was just you do something, get something, and then do. Then what do you do within that? Where's the relationship? Does that make sense? Because many times we expect, okay, we'll pray to Krishna and we'll just get the facilities. It'll just happen. No, we pray to Krishna and then we understand how to actually get it. So Krishna gives the ability to get it. Right? Is there a method for getting a planet greater than Lord Brahma's? Yes, what is it? No, but I'm saying before this, was there? No. But because he was, so he's getting the impossible, but he still has to make the endeavor. Because otherwise, where's the relationship with the Lord, the reciprocation, with the devotees? Where's the pastime? You know, so if he asked, okay, here's the planet, you know, then what's really been done? Where's the glory? Where's the story? You know, whole Bhagavatam would be like 3 pages. And so then Devahuti asked for this, and then Vila says, okay, and she got it. And then Dhruva Maharaj, she asked for something bigger than that, and then Narada Muni said, wow, great, cool, and then he got it. And then...
But this is about us. We don't want stories, we don't want stories, we want something tangible. Some other people can get the story.
No, but the story is showing you how it's tangible.
What I mean, the ordinary people, they don't get a story. And they don't get the result either.
Yes, so they don't get buckets. They don't get anything.
It's something tangible is better than the story.
No, but the story is about how tangibly it works. That's what we're saying. You have to do something. That's what's tangible. So this is a story about tangibility. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. If you want something, you have to make the endeavor. So, in other words, we're praying Krishna for something to work out, but that means is that what actually is there is Krishna reveals how you can endeavor that it'll work out. It's working out by His grace, but you're still making the endeavor. Otherwise, where's pastime? Because if it comes down to it wouldn't there, then why even you have to work? Why, you know, why you have to cook? You just always feel hungry. I mean, feel satisfied. You've never eaten. You never feel tired. You never. So what are you going to do? You don't need to go out and actually, you know, do some activity. You already feel satisfied that you have done activity. So what would be your identity? What would you do? What would you be? You would just exist. And so, huh? Yes, but then the whole point is what's the need of. You do already exist, so wouldn't you like to take it further? Since we exist, should we do something with it? Right? The mountain already exists. Right? So people should be satisfied. No, they climb the mountain. Why? Because it exists. Right? So they do something. So that's the whole point. Krishna, he being Atmarama, because if he's just Atmarama, we're not going to be manifest to do anything. Right? Because being dependent, that means there's us and there has to be someone else. Krishna himself is independent. He's complete. We being energy, then we're dependent upon the energetic. So there must be two. So that means then there should be relationship and interaction. Does that make sense? So that's why then the story on how it worked out, everything... You know, and you get the whole thing. You get the feelings, you get the technique, you get the, you know, the whole story. Well, okay. In the same way, Narada Muni asked Dhruva Maharaj to undergo devotional discipline in order to achieve the desired result. Because you have to express. You have devotion, express it. Any person who desires the fruit of the four principles, religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification, and, at the end, liberation, should engage himself in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For worship of his lotus feet yields the fulfillment of all these. Right? So those come as just side things. You worship the Lord in devotion, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha come automatically. So if you want dharma, artha, kama, moksha, the only way to get it is through bhakti. Right? So it's the same thing. Whether you want devotion, you perform devotional activities, and you get dharma, artha, kama, moksha anyway. You want dharma, artha, kama, moksha, perform devotion. Does that make sense? So that's why he didn't change. He just changed from doing a more direct devotional thing to, in other words, perform devotional service, all these things will be taken care of. To, okay, you want to take care of these, do devotional service. All they did was reverse where you're starting. Right? So for Narad Muni, it's the same thing. But for Dhruva Maharaj, this makes a difference on what he can accept. Right? Yes?
So when is the principle of Savadhamma Paricharya coming?
That's the first one.
Yeah, that's basically, Srimad Bhagavatam starts out.
That's where it is. That's what it's about. But it means that you can get to that platform only through devotional service. So that's the whole point. The mundane won't give it to you. Yes. The mundane won't give you. It's only if you have the karma, right? So even if you say, okay, but I do the activity to get the karma. Okay, but I do the activity to get the karma. If there's one thing wrong, I won't get it. Devotional service, you're doing it, but you'll get it. Right? Even if it's not perfect. Because the point is the devotional service. Now, if you're only doing it just enough, you're applying devotion just to the karma, just enough to make the karma work. And once you get the karma, you drop the devotion. Then that's not recommended. That's what the materialist is. But for the devotees, then they apply the devotion, you know, to the karma. And then from them, they're developing the devotion and the karma at the same time. So then their material desires fulfilled at the same time as their spiritual desires fulfilled. And by fulfilling the spiritual desire, there's no need for the material desire anymore.
It seems that Ruben doesn't have that desire to fulfill the Lord except to get that result.
Yes. But he's willing to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead for that. Right? So he's taking this step further, because most people, when they're applying this principle that I was just talking about, adding bhakti, they're only working on the platform of Brahmana Paramatma. But he's willing to work on the platform of Bhagavan. So by applying the aspect of Bhagavan to it, then Krishna removes the need for that material. You get the material, but he removes the need for it. Because in the material world, you deserve it due to your karma, then only you get it. By devotional service, you get it, but you don't need it. Right? And that you can keep, because if you need it, you will lose it. You don't need it, you can keep it. That's just the way energy works. Just like we said, the man who's totally attached to the woman, how long will that work? Right? Unless he's really expert at just taking care of what she wants, and it's just, it keeps going on, that she doesn't become bored. You know, and that you have to give credit to Ajamil. You know, he's 88 years old. I mean, no, he's 88 when Narayan was born. So for him to call Narayan means Narayan must have been big enough to be able to come. So that puts him 1.5, 2 years old. You know, maybe 3, you know, whatever it is like that. So that means he may be 90, 91. And that prostitute is still with him. And it's only because it mentions there's a prostitute. It's not mentioned that the prostitute has become his wife. Because at that point, you don't call her a prostitute anymore. Right? Because the Shastra mentions someone might find a good wife
in somebody who was a prostitute, but they've committed themselves to the relationship, so they're no longer a prostitute. Right? Because they know what makes things work. Right? So the prostitute takes the lead in activity. Right? That's why it appears attractive. Right? Because if you have husband and wife, the man has to take the lead, not the woman. Does that make sense? So, for the woman to take the lead, you pay. You know? You take the lead, you don't have to pay. Right? So, she knows how the process works, so she can apply that into being a wife. Right? Because it's the same technique, it's just a matter of whether you take the lead or whether you the other person takes the lead. That's it. But otherwise, the interaction is the same. Does that make sense? So she's still called a prostitute. You know, so one indicates either she's still in that mood. So as long as he's taking care of her and pleasing her by coming up with facility, and it must be good because the desire for facility increases. So he must be good. Or she's become, a wife, but at the same time as she still has that low-class mentality, she's very materialistic. You know, but still, even if she's very materialistic, he has to be expert to keep. So, how do we get into that? That had a very specific point. Anybody remember? What were we describing? Something about, about the endeavor, you have to work. So now it's just a matter of whether you get a temporary result or you get a permanent result. You know? So you have to make that, you have to do work anyway. It's just what you want from it. So, does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's about worshiping the Lord. Why is worshiping the Lord does all the things? Because otherwise we tend to think, okay, devotional service gets one thing and my endeavor gets another. Oh, okay, so according to karma. Unless you have the karma, you can't do it. That was the thing. Ajahn Mio had to have the karma. Otherwise, how is he pleasing this woman? 90 years and the woman's still with him. How is that working? That means he's good. So he has the karma. Others try, they aren't able to hold it together. So that's the point. It's the materialist. Unless you have the karma from previous austerity to get it, you're not going to get it. Or you get it, it'll be temporary. So for the devotee, because it's not coming from karma, it's becoming from Krishna's pleasure. It's by bhakti, therefore you can get it. But if you want it, you can't have it. You don't need it, you can have it.
And it's also temporary.
It's temporary, but it's just like no, it's always going to be temporary, but it's just a matter of whether it's longer term temporary, shorter term temporary. Because if you're talking pious temporary, you're talking it goes spans over lifetimes. And impious, you're talking about within a very short time of this. Does that make sense? You know? Unless, of course, you've traded a lot of piety for this impiety. I translate a huge amount of piety into impiety, so I get a very great amount immediately, but then it'll also disappear very quickly. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of how temporary. So therefore, that's why the devotee doesn't even get impressed by piety, because he knows that karma and jnana are still temporary. So he goes for the bhakti. But the point is that only the bhakti can give anything. So use it temporarily, you'll get a short-term result, but use it to please the Lord, then it will be fulfilled, but it'll be generally fulfilled when it's not important. Is that sounds nice? Okay, just like this. Does that? Okay. There's some people, they somehow know to save up some money, and you know, for years, and they plan and that, and then they get to spend a little time on the yacht. They're impressed. How much time are they on the yacht? Not much time. There's some other people, they have the money, they own the yacht, but they're out on the yacht, they're bored stiff. You know? And they have the problem of what to do with this yacht. Where to park it, this and that. The other guys, they're just accident, you know, this, you got to put it in this, where you put it in the marina, you know, it's in this place that gets the waves too much, it's over there, then it's out of the way, and somebody else has the boat in the way, and, you know, I would say it's a whole trip. Does that make sense? So even though you had it, freaks you out, I was just hearing about some, I forget what it was, maybe it was a shake or something, and wherever he came in, when he came into the marina, there could be no other boats in the marina. So if he's on the boat, there can be no other boats in the marina. So when he comes in, the marina has to be clear. He comes in, parks his boat, if he stays on the boat, it's empty. When he leaves the boat and goes back and he's not doing boats, then the other boats can come in. So one time he's coming in, and there's another boat there. Huge boat. I mean, impressive boat. And he is freaking out. You know, why is his boat there? You know, the captain is there. That's his main, you know, he spies the boat. That's his main thing he has to organize. He's coming in. He's fired. He's this and that. He's like really freaking out. And then finally when they can get through to him, calm down and that, and they say, the reason that boat's there is your boat. You've forgotten he had a second boat. You know, because he was impressed. Well, look at that boat. Why are that boat's here? Who is the guy that's here? Who did they think, you know, I'm him? You know, this one. No, it's his boat. So, like that. Okay. In his commentary to this verse, Srila Prabhupada emphasizes that for one who has actually surrendered to the lotus feet of the Lord, there is no question of any separate endeavor for economic development. A devotee engaged in service to the Lord is not disappointed in the satisfaction of his senses. If he wants to satisfy his senses, Krishna fulfills that desire. As far as liberation is concerned, any devotee fully engaged in the service of the Lord is already liberated. Therefore, there is no separate necessity for his liberation. And so you don't have to separately endeavor. It's taken care of. Because you're performing the activities that fulfill desires. Right? I perform the pious activity. That gets me the result of karma. I'm doing it without attachment. That gets me the result of jnana. But why am I doing those two things? To please Krishna. It's bhakti. I don't have to do a separate endeavor. Does that make sense? Because we think of it, we compartmentalize, so we think that this is this, this is that. No, it's that the activity itself, it only functions because of Krishna's potencies. And the point is, what are the potencies for? For devotional service. That means devotional service automatically includes the results of activities that we're trying to get by using the energy separate from God. Right? If I use the cooking process connected to Krishna or not connected to Krishna, I end up with the same cooked preparation. But as far as making advancement spiritually and becoming satisfied, it's only if I connect it to Krishna. Does that make sense? So, that means I have a recipe for cooking potatoes. Right? So, the materialist takes that recipe, he cooks it, he gets the potato preparation, it's there. Right? Now, the devotee is going to cook that recipe for Krishna. So, what is the main thing he's getting from this endeavor?
Pleasing
the Lord, right? It's the devotional service. What's the secondary attribute that comes? He gets the potato preparation. So it's not a separate endeavor. If you perform your duties to please Krishna, you automatically get these secondary aspects. But the more you want them, generally the more they elude you. The more you want to please Krishna, the more they're there. That's just how energy works. Does that make sense? Right? The guy's fired up, the girl moves over. The guy, okay, gives up, the girl moves back. Does that make sense? It's just like, let us say, I think they've used the example before. All the ladies are getting ready for the wedding. They're dressing. They're all in various stages of being dressed. And basically that means not so dressed. Okay? Now, let's say a 3-year-old or a 5-year-old walks into that room. Anybody adjusts? Not at all. Can he stay there all day? Yes. Does he have anything to gain there? No. That's why he can stay there. Now, let's say the best man walks in. Oh, now all hell breaks loose. You understand? Or the groom walks in. Now, the whole wedding is about the groom. So he wants, he can't get. The kid has nothing to gain. He can stay there all day. Does this make sense? That's just how energy works. Does that make sense? That's why doing the duty expertly means you get the best result, but because you're not attached to it, that's why it's there. But as soon as you're attached, it goes away. So therefore, please Krishna, you're actually satisfying the soul, and the conditioning is satisfied because the secondary aspect is there also. You just use it in Krishna service. So you have it, you use it in Krishna service. You want it, it goes away. That's the fun part. That's how it... Because we're thinking, no, I can have it, I can be attached and have it. But you can't. That's just the way it works. Narad Muni therefore advised Dhruva Maharaj to take shelter of Vasudeva, Lord Krishna, and engage himself in that way that his mother has advised. For that would help him fulfill his desire. Right? Because what his mother has advised is the principal point. He's going to tell him the secondary aspects. Right? But that's what he's saying. Like your mother said, that's what you have to do. She doesn't know the techniques. He doesn't know the techniques. Narad Muni will tell him the techniques. In this verse, and engage himself in the way that his mother had advised, for that would help him fulfill his desire. Right? Help, because it's actually the Lord being pleased. So the medium has to be there for the Lord to be pleased. You perform your duty, that's the medium. Right? You do it in all exactingness, exactly how it should be done. The Lord's pleased that you follow the rules of nature. You get your result by karma. You're doing it because you want to please Krishna. Right? Then Krishna's pleased because of the devotion. Then you get your result. Right? The karma gets the result according to what he deserves. The devotee gets the result beyond what he expects. Right? Because he's trying to please Krishna. In this verse, Narad Muni has especially stressed the devotional service of the Lord as the only way. In other words, even if one is full of material desires, he can continue his devotional service to the Lord and all his desires will be fulfilled. That's the whole thing. You have desires, continue your devotional service. They will be fulfilled. But we have to remember, it's because as mentioned before, is along with pleasure comes pain. So the desires will be fulfilled, but also the trouble that comes along with it will also be there. But if it's done in devotion to the Lord, then one doesn't mind. We don't want the bad to happen. We only want the good to happen. But if you're doing it for Krishna, then we don't mind the bad or the good. Right? But if we only want the good, we'll get the bad. We'll really notice it. Right? Because we don't want it. But if you don't care, then when it comes, it goes. It goes. Does that make sense? If we're detached, then bad stays temporarily. If we're attached, then the difficulty stays eternally, right? Because that's the perception. Right?
both Narad Muni and Suniti, the mother of Dhruva Maharaj, advise Dhruva Maharaj to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the next verses, Narad Muni is especially giving him directions how this worship of the Supreme Person can be very quickly fructified. He recommends that Dhruva Maharaj go to the Madhuvan because it is the chief of all holy places. My dear boy, therefore I wish all good fortune for you. You should go to the bank of the Jamuna, where there is a virtuous forest named Madhuvan, and there be purified. Just by going there, one draws near to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who always lives there. 42, Srila Prabhupada explains. Places of pilgrimage yield a special advantage for a devotee in quickly advancing his spiritual life. Lord Krishna lives everywhere, but still it is very easy to approach him in the holy places of pilgrimage because these places are inhabited by great sages. So you have the Dham that is there, and there's great sages living here whether you see them or not. Right? So therefore it has that specialness of it, you advance very quickly. Now if you have a place that's outside the Dham, right, anywhere in the world, if there are saintly persons living there, it has that effect. Though the Dham is unique, that'll be 1,000 times that. But you'll very quickly get the Lord's blessings, right? Wherever you're in association with devotees. But the Dham itself is special because... So we get the benefit of those we can perceive, and we get the benefit of those we can't perceive. Because the Lord is performing His eternal pastimes with His eternal associates. So we get that benefit from that association, even though we don't appreciate it. That's why it's... Lord Sri Krishna says that He lives wherever His devotees are chanting the glories of His transcendental activities. There are many places of pilgrimage in India, and especially prominent in Badri Narayana, Dwarka, Rameshwaram, and Jagannath Puri, right? These are the Char Dham. These sacred places are called the Four Dhams. Dhamma refers to a place where one can immediately contact the Supreme Lord. Yes? That's in another category. Because you see, these are Badri, Dwarka, Rameshwar, Jagannath Puri. This is all on the your lower Goloka level. Right? Your Dwarka kind of level. Dwarka, Mahanarayan, Jagannath, that kind of aspect. But Vrindavan and Mayapur, that's on the Gokul level. That's another aspect.
The rest is to
Yeah, because it's a Dham, but these are known as the four Char Dham. Everybody accepts these. Yes, everybody accepts these. But then devotees that we have there, because you're not talking about Raja Bhakti here, but the point is it's a Dham, so Krishna's there, so it'll work very quickly. Okay, so we'll stop here.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki